everybody is feeding yourself on the hysteria and the negativity. You gotta stay in the light. But one of the reasons why I was so excited is about A Wrinkle in Time, because the message is that the darkness is spreading so fast these days. You must become a warrior of the light. And the reason that's so meaningful to me is because that's how I've led my whole life. For these times, the darkness is there to show you your light. Look at what has happened. So if you put the focus on, look at what happened with the darkness that showed up in Parkland, and the darkness that showed up on the streets of Ferguson, and the darkness that showed up in many, 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 many homes in Chicago with shootings and senseless murders. It brings out the best in people. It brings out the best. And so that's what it's there. We live on a planet where there is darkness and light. I deeply believe is not that do unto others as you would have them do unto you. What you do is already done. That moment in The Color Purple where she says, everything you ever tried to do to me, already done to you. So the law, the third law of motion in physics says that what you're putting out is coming back all the time, regardless of whether you know it or acknowledge it or not. I say to my girls all of the time that your real work is to figure out where your power base is, and to work on the alignment of your personality, your gifts that you have to give, with the real reason why you're here. That's the number one thing you have to do, is to work on yourself and to fill yourself up and keep your cup full. Keep yourself full. Now, I used to be afraid of that. I used to be afraid, particularly from people who say, oh, she's so full of herself. She's so full of herself. And now I embrace it. I consider it a compliment that I am full of myself. Because you only when you're full, I'm full, I'm overflowing, my cup runneth over. I have so much to offer and so much to give. And I am not afraid of honoring myself, you know? It's miraculous when you think about it. My life is fueled by my being, and the being fuels the doing. So I come from a centered place. I come from a focused place. I come from compassion. I come from a willingness to understand and to be understood. And I come from wanting to connect. I mean, the secret of that show for 25 years is that people could see themselves in me. All over the world, they could see themselves in me. And even as I became more and more financially successful, which was a big surprise to me, I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. But what I realized is through the whole process, because I'm grounded in my own self, that although I could have more shoes, my feet stayed on the ground, although I was wearing better shoes. These are kind of cute today, too. So I could keep my feet on the ground, even though I could get more shoes. And I could understand that it really was because I was grounded. I've done and continue to this day to do the consciousness work. I work at staying awake. The reason why I was number one for 25 years is because I figured out early on, there is no story anybody has ever heard that somebody else hasn't experienced. Nothing. And I also figured out, probably maybe the first or second year, that all pain is the same. That a mother in Somalia feels the same way as a mother in Seattle when she loses her child. And the common denominator in the human experience is our emotions and our feelings. And the more vulnerable and open you are willing to be with your story, the more actual understanding you create with other people, and the more powerful you become. People don't think less of you for sharing your story. They think more of you for having the courage to share it. What inspired me was, and is, continues to be, what continues to inspire me is a primal and fundamental desire to fulfill the highest expression of myself as a human being. I don't want to die not having completely burnt out every single possibility of my humanity. When I leave this planet, I want everybody to say, did that, used it all up. Not another thing I could do. There wasn't another person I could have given of myself to. There wasn't another deed I could have done. There wasn't anything that you want to say, I want to fill it up. You want to take this whole human existence, which when you think about it, Godfrey, is really pretty damn miraculous.
It is.
It is.
It is.
When you think about what it means to be a human being on the planet Earth right now, that's pretty awesome. So I just want to, I want to take that to the max. I want to say, no need to come back as a human. The day, first day I went to school, I was in a classroom. By the time I was, 6 years old, didn't go to school till I was 6 years old because I lived with my grandmother at that time.
Sure.
But she had taught me how to read the Bible, Bible stories. So I went into the classroom knowing Nicodemus, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I could spell all of those words. I thought I was, I was preaching to my kindergarten teacher.
You're an old man.
So she was like, who is this girl? So I was never placed in an environment where I was ever made to feel inferior. I always felt like I'm the smartest kid in this room. And because I was never placed never put in a position where I was made to feel less than,
sure,
I didn't grow up feeling less than, you know?
And the rest, as they say, is history.
And the rest, as they say, is history. And it's all about what you believe. You know, I say this to when I do something on my network now called Life Class. The fundamental key to success is what you believe is true for yourself. Not what you want, not what you desire. It's what do you believe? You know, you can say, I want to be the most successful person in the world.
Yeah.
But if you believe that there's a glass ceiling and you're going to have a hard time kicking through that glass ceiling, you will
down.
Be defined by the glass ceiling. And the great beauty and gift of my life is that I was never defined by the box that other people tried to put me in. The energy of your intention is what determines your life. Most people don't think about their intention. They just think about what they want to do. Most people don't think about why they want to do it. But what's going to come back to you, the energy that's going to come back to you, is the real why of why you did it.
What drives you to keep working so hard? You could, you and I are in the 60s category. And so when you're in your 60s, you've lived more than you're going to live,
realistically.
So when you realize you've lived more than you're going to live, you can say, why not relax a little bit? Why not just ease up? Why have you decided to even work harder than you did before?
Because I think, David, that everybody, the thing that worked for me all these years, whether it was the magazine, or which I still have, or whether it was the show, I understood that there's a common denominator in the human experience. And I want the same thing you want, which is the same thing you want and you want. What we all want is to be able to live out the truest, highest expression of ourselves as a human being. That doesn't end until you take your last breath. What is the truest, highest vision that you hold for yourself? No matter where you are in your life, there's always the next level. There's always the next level to the last breath. So I feel that I always knew that I would be done with the show when I felt like, I've said as much as I could say here on this platform. And then how will I be used? If there were a theme song to my life, Amazing Grace would be one of them. So I feel that until you have used your value as a human being, you're not done.
My biggest frustration is not just with young women. My biggest frustration is also with young men, young people who think that, and I have a lot of this with my girls in college, they think that success is supposed to happen like that.
Yeah.
They think.
Yes.
That there isn't a process to it. They think that they're supposed to come out of college and have their brand. And I recognize now that I am a brand, but I was resistant to being called a brand for many years because I was like, brand. I'm not a brand. I'm a person. But how I got to be a brand was not trying to be a brand.
Yes.
How I got to be a brand was every day making choices that felt like this is the right move, now that's the right move, and now that's the next right move, the next right move. And so my frustration with young women and young men, yes, is that they think it's supposed to happen like this, and they don't understand that there's a process to it.
I always understood that there really was no difference between me and the audience. At times, I might have had better shoes, but at the core of what really matters, that we are the same. And you know how I know that? Because all of us are seeking the same thing. You're here at this fabulous school, and we'll go out into the world and each pursue based upon what you believe your talents are, what your skills are, maybe your gifts are, but you're seeking the same thing. Everybody wants to fulfill the highest, truest expression of yourself as a human being. That's what you're looking for. The highest, truest expression of yourself as a human being. And because I understand that, I understand that if you're working in a bakery and that's where you want to be, and that may be the, that may be what you've always wanted to do, is to bake pies for people or bake cakes for people or to offer your gift, then that's for you. And there's no difference between you and me, except that's your platform. Mm-hmm. That's your show every day. So my understanding of that has allowed me to
reach everyone.
And there's no way that you wouldn't, because that's what I truly feel. The way through the challenge is to get still and ask yourself, what is the next right move? Not think about, oh, I got all of this stuff. What is the next right move? And then from that space, make the next right move and the next right move. And not to be overwhelmed by it, because you know your life is bigger than that one moment. You know you're not defined by what somebody says is a failure for you, because failure is just there to point you in a different direction. If I leave you with nothing else, just know this for sure. There is not one thing that has ever happened to you, not one experience, not one encounter, not one crisis, not one joyful thing that hasn't happened just to make you better and help you rise. Every single thing you're calling in, whether you know it or not, when you figure out that you are calling it in, when you actually start meditating or praying or doing or having a spiritual practice, which is the number one thing you need if you want to be successful in the world. You need something that gives back and nourishes you, regardless of what you call that. You need to fill your cup so that you can be so full your cup runneth over and you have enough to give to other people. If you don't fill your cup, you end up dried up. You end up tired, exhausted, and don't have enough to give to other people. You end up resentful every time somebody asks you because your cup is empty and now they want some of yours. So your number one job is to fill your cup and make yourself whole. So for me, the foundational base of empowerment, of entrepreneurship, of any kind of engagement, the foundational base of my success, of my well-being, my wholeness, my everything, is knowing who I am and where I come from. In my living room right now is a painting that I've owned now for 30 years. You can Google it. It's called To the Highest Bidder. And it's at the center of my house. And it's at the center of my house because it actually is symbolic of the foundation of not the house, but the foundation for my life. The painting is by Harry Roslin, who was a genre painter in the early 20th, late 19th century. And the painting is over 6 feet tall. And it shows a slave woman on the auction block holding her daughter's hand. And I cannot come in the door, my front door, or I cannot leave without passing that painting. I am reminded of where I come from every day of my life, and I am reminded because I never want to forget it. And in my library, I have a framed list of enslaved African-American people, remember I showed you, who were held in bondage on various plantations, listed in the ledgers alongside the cows and the horses and the buggies and the other property. And I pass this list every day. And often I stop in front of it and just speak their names out loud and their ages. Jonas, 11 years old, $500. Sarah, 41 years old, $900. Elizabeth, 57, $800. And I force myself to consider the absurdity and the obscenity of prices being affixed to each one should they be placed up for sale. And I sometimes just pause before them with a prayer, particularly before I have to make a big decision about one of my companies or whether I move forward or whether I stay still. It reminds me, speaking those names out loud, not only of where I've come from, but how far I have to go because of them. And it reminds me that I am never alone. It reminds me of what I've come through to get through. I say to my girls all of the time that your real work is to figure out where your power base is and to work on the alignment of your personality, your gifts that you have to give, with the real reason why you're here. That's the number one thing you have to do, is to work on yourself and to fill yourself up and keep your cup full. Keep yourself full. Now, I used to be afraid of that. I used to be afraid, particularly from people who say, oh, she's so full of herself. She's so full of herself. And now I embrace it. I consider it a compliment that I am full of myself. Because you only when you're full, I'm overflowing, my cup runneth over. I have so much to offer and so much to give. And I am not afraid of honoring myself. You know, it's miraculous when you think about it. Everybody has a different talent. And the reason we're all so messed up is because you're looking at everybody else's talent and wishing you had some of their talent. All the energy that you spend thinking about, wishing about, being jealous of, envious of anybody else is energy that you're not only putting out that's going to come back to you negatively, but you're taking that away from you. All your energy should be forced on what do I have to offer? What do I have to give? How can I be used in service? Because Dr. King's message of not everybody can be famous, but everybody can be great because greatness is determined by service. And there is not a job in here that you can do that you don't switch the paradigm to service and not make that job more fulfilling. I don't care what the job is. If you say, I'm a singer, I'm a dancer, I'm an artist, I'm a teacher, I'm a nurse, I'm a doctor, I'm a janitor, I'm a clerk, if you say, if I look at this from how do I use this in service to something bigger than myself? It no longer becomes a job. It becomes an offering to the world. The first law is the third law of motion in physics, which says for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And we showed that very beautifully in The Color Purple when Miss Seeley says to Mista, everything you even try to do to me is already done to you. That is not just a rhetorical saying. That is law. That is Newton's third law of motion in physics, which says everything that goes out is coming back. It's just like everything that goes up is coming down. May take it a long time to come down, is coming down. Everything that goes out is coming back, it's coming back. So to answer the power of manifestation and meditation, what meditation does is sync you up with the source.
What meditation does is allows you to literally tap into the power that created you so that you are in alignment with that. And so when you carry that out into the world, everything that you do comes from the center of that alignment that's coming from the source that we call God, we call divine energy, divine intelligence, whatever name you want to give it to, we call life. When you are synced up with life, life just gives to you. The number one lesson I could offer you where your work is concerned is this: become so skilled, so vigilant, so flat out fantastic at what you do that your talent cannot be dismissed. You know, when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a social worker or be a teacher or somehow be in an environment where I would be connected and speaking to people to honor that calling. I had no idea that God could dream this big dream of a television life for myself. But everybody has a calling, and your real job in life is to figure out as soon as possible what that is, who you were meant to be, and begin to honor that in the best way possible for yourself. We have seen over the years on the Oprah Show so many people who've been able to rise to success in their life and only able to rise to success because they answered the call. Lots of people think that it's about being famous or about being known or about doing big, big, incredible things. What you're gonna hear today and see through the stories is that sometimes the calling is right in your own neighborhood. Sometimes the calling is something that was just a whisper to you. And when you begin to honor that whisper and to follow that, you end up being the best that you could be. I actually thought at the time that being thin made me better. My identification with form, my wanting so desperately to be in a size 10 jean was so prominent, identifying with that, that shortly after this, I gained 5 pounds and I was invited to a party at the time by Don Johnson. Remember Dreamy Don Johnson? I was invited to a holiday party, and I did not go to that party because I thought the 5 pounds made me too fat, not good enough to be at Don Johnson's party. Sounds kind of sick now, I know. But that's what the ego does. It is sick. It's wily, it's cunning, it's deceptive. It's an imposter imposing on the real you, making you often think that you're something that you're not. You're not the shape of your body. You're not your status. You're not your position in life. You're not the car you drive, no matter how fancy it is. You're not your house or your square footage. For all of you watching right now, here's another way to better understand ego, what I'm talking about. Eckhart taught me this. Everybody, try this from home or wherever you are right now. Close your eyes and notice what you're thinking. Notice your thoughts. Now, who is thinking those thoughts? Can you notice that there is a space where you are observing the thoughts and where you are aware of the thoughts that you are observing? Eckhart says, you are that awareness disguised as a person. And when I got that, I understood the difference between my true self and my ego self. Over the years, we've heard invaluable information that in a moment of danger could be life-saving. Nothing I heard made a greater impression on me than back in 1991. I think we were beginning our 5th season, and a man named Sanford Strong came on and shared this. Never forgot it.
Rule number one, and frankly, it's probably, in my opinion, the most important. Never allow them to take you somewhere else. Never. If everyone in this room and everyone watching this program has never drawn the line and made a decision on crime protection, You better make it when they decide to move you from crime scene number one to crime scene number two. Because the crime scene number two is going to be isolated. You won't choose it. You'll be the focus of the crime.
I think what was so interesting about that piece of advice is at the time that we all heard that, we had been trained as women people especially to believe that you just do whatever they say. Whatever they say, go along with it. And what's important for those of you who are watching right now and those of you who are on the internet with us right now to know is that it's all about using your gut in the moment. And people who've survived horrific circumstances talk about listening to that intuition and every move being made calculated on listening to what your gut says. What the experts now say is do not allow yourself to be taken to the second location, because anybody who is trying to harm you wants to get you to an isolated place where they can do that without other people seeing or knowing it. So in that moment of making the decision, oh, you're gonna shoot me, if you're gonna shoot me, you have to shoot me now rather than shoot me in isolation where nobody can see you. Whenever somebody has said something that made the little hairs on my arms or neck stand up, I know that if that's happening to me, that's also happening to somebody else too. The way to make movies is to do stuff that you love, because, you know, for 25 years I worked on The Oprah Show, and Stedman will tell you that there were nights that I came home and I almost, you know, it was hard to even like take off my clothes because I knew I was going to be getting up 4 hours later. But I never really felt exhausted, I never felt exhausted, but I never felt depleted. So do the work that comes straight from the soul of you, from your background, from stories that you've grown up with, from stories that bring you passion, from stories that you not just yearn to tell, but that if you don't tell them, they won't get told. And when you are operating, you know, the single greatest wisdom I think I've ever received, other than when people show you who they are, is that the key to fulfillment, success, happiness, contentment in life is when you align your personality with what your soul actually came to do. I believe everybody has a soul and has, you know, their own personal spiritual energy. So when you can use your personality to serve whatever that thing is, you can't help but be successful. So if you do films that come from the interior of your soul, you do work, you do art that comes from the interior of you, you cannot miss. It's only when you're doing stuff that you think might make money, you think it may be a hit, or you think it may bring you some level of attention or success. That isn't what does it. I would have to say that all of the great, wonderful experiences of my life that have brought me to this moment have come from working from the interior of myself. And so that's why it feels so authentic, because it actually is. So when you do that, you'll win. And everybody has a different talent. And the reason we're all so messed up is because you're looking at everybody else's talent and wishing you had some of their talent. All the energy that you spend thinking about, wishing about, being jealous of, envious of anybody else is energy that you're not only putting out that's going to come back to you negatively, but you're taking that away from you. All your energy should be forced on what do I have to offer? What do I have to give? How can I be used in service? Because Dr. King's message of not everybody can be famous, but everybody can be great, because greatness is determined by service. And there is not a job in here that you can do that you don't switch the paradigm to service and not make that job more fulfilling. I don't care what the job is. If you say, I'm a singer, I'm a dancer, I'm an artist, I'm a teacher, I'm a nurse, I'm a doctor, I'm a janitor, I'm a clerk, if you say, if I look at this from how do I use this in service to something bigger than myself? Yes. It no longer becomes a job. It becomes an offering to the world. I first started making money, and it was, you know, my salary or my earnings were published all over the place. I mean, the first year I was like, really? Did I make that much money? Oh my God. it was very difficult for me to figure out where my boundaries were because I'd grown up poor and didn't have anything. So it's easy when you don't have anything and people ask you for money. They say, I need $500. You say, I don't have it because I'm just trying to get my rent paid. It's harder when your multi-billion dollar salary is now in the paper and you get a lot of friends and cousins you didn't have before. So how do you set boundaries for yourself? I was having trouble setting boundaries for myself, for even strangers. People would just show up at my door in Chicago and say, Oprah, I left my husband, please help me. And I would, because she knows I have it. So what I learned was that, the reason why people keep showing up is because my intention is to make them think that I'm such a nice person that you can ask me for anything. You can get me to do anything. I'm gonna say yes. So when Stevie called me this time, I thought I'd try out my first no on Stevie. Let's start big. He wanted me to donate some money to a charity, and I didn't want to donate to the charity because I have my own charities and I care about a lot of people, but the problem is when you have money, everybody thinks you just want to give to everything. So every letter I ever get starts with, we know you love the children. Yes, I do love the children, but somebody else is going to have to help the children. So I said to Stevie, no. And as a person who has that disease to please, I was waiting for him then to say, I will never speak to you again. I will never call you. I will never sing a song for you. And he didn't. He just said, okay. Okay? Okay, it's okay? He said, okay, check you later. And what I learned from that is, many times you will have angst and worry about things and put yourself in a state, like someone said this morning, because her phone went off, they were mortified over a phone, I said, really? You will put yourself in a state when the other person really isn't even thinking about you. So learning that I could specifically determine for myself what the boundaries were for me, what I wanted to do, give my money, give my time, give of my service to who I wanted to give it to when I did, that I get to make that decision. And just because you get 100 requests a week doesn't mean you have to try to fulfill all of that. Just because you have all of these demands on your time and on you doesn't mean that you have to say yes. You get to decide because you're the master of your fate. The captain of your soul, as William Ernest Henley said in Invictus. And understanding that really changed the meaning of my life in that I was no longer driven by what other people wanted me to do, but took charge of my own destiny, making choices based upon what do I feel is the next right move for me. There was one woman out of all the celebrities, out of all of the famous, non-famous, infamous people, one woman who was she? Her name is Tarai Trent. Listen to this story. I'm gonna try to shorten it for you,
please,
Godfrey.
Do.
Okay.
Do.
Tarai Trent, born and raised in a village in Zimbabwe, 11 years old. She's doing her brother's homework. She wants to go to school. Her father says no.
You have to educate the boy first.
Yep, that's right.
That was the tradition.
That's right. The boy has to go to school. You can't go to school. So she starts doing her brother's homework. She does her brother's homework. He goes to school. He gets all A's on his homework, yet he doesn't know the answer to the question. The teacher comes to the village to say, what is going on here? This boy doesn't know the answers, but his homework's perfect. She finds out that Tarai, his younger sister, is doing his homework. She begs the father to let Tarai go to school. The father says, no, she can't go to school. Finally, he marries her off. She marries at 11 and a half years old. She gets married. She has 3 children by the time she's 18 years old. A woman comes to the village from an NGO, Heifer International, and asks, what are your dreams? This is gonna make me cry. Finally, you're gonna make me cry. Asks her, what are your dreams? This child has never thought about what her dreams were. She says, write down your dreams.
She writes down her dreams on a piece of paper and she folds them in a tin can and she buries them under a rock. The first dream was to be able to go to a school in the United States of America and get a college degree. She ends up, through some miracle of the NGO, going to the United States. She gets a college degree.
Wow.
Yes, she gets a 4-year degree in 3 years. Tara Rye Trent. She goes back to the rock in Zimbabwe. She writes her next goal on the piece of paper. She buries it under the rock. She writes, I want to get a master's degree. She goes back to the United States. She gets a master's degree. By this time, she now has 5 children. She's married to a man who still beats her.
Incredible.
She goes back to the United States. She gets her master's degree. After the master's degree, she goes back to the rock in Zimbabwe. She writes down her final goal is to get a doctorate degree. And last year, she became Dr. Tara Rye Trent.
Where did you find it?
Where did I find it? I found her in the Nicholas Kristof's book called something, The Sky, Underneath the Sky, or The Sky. I found her in Nicholas Kristof's book.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
And I was reading the story. I had Nicholas Kristof on the show. Nicholas Kristof, the famous New York Times writer. And she wasn't there. She wasn't a part of the show. I'm reading the story. I can't believe this book, the story of this woman, as I'm reading the story. So when we go to do the show, the producers have Nicholas Kristof on. They bring on other guests, but this woman isn't there. I go, how could you not have her there? So we tape another show with Nicholas Kristof. We go back. I go, fine, we're going to find that woman, Tara Rye Trent. By this time, she's living in the United States. We followed her back to Zimbabwe to the rock. We pulled the tin can from underneath the rock. And that is my favorite guest of all time.
And the worst?
I don't have a worst. But the reason why she, and as I said this on my show, the reason why Tara Rye Trent is my favorite guest of all time is because she represents in that one story of the little girl in a village in Zimbabwe who had a dream and the heart and depth and discipline to pursue it. She represents everything I tried to say in every show in 25 years. She literally, through her life story, sums up the message that I was trying to give to every single one of my viewers. You can. Keep trying. Don't give up.
You have to believe.
Over the years, the centuries, so many teachers and poets and songwriters have talked about the significance of knowing yourself. I know we've all heard, to thine own self be true, Shakespeare, or learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all, Whitney Houston. What I know for sure is that in all the talk about loving yourself, you can't begin to love yourself or even be true to yourself unless you know who you are, separate from your ego. So think about this for a moment. You're at home listening, watching to me, and taking in the thoughts that I'm sharing right now. And there is an inner space that allows you to perceive these thoughts. Not even a space. I'm just using the word space because there is no other word. There is the ability to perceive what I'm saying and be aware of what I'm saying. That is where the true you abides, in that awareness, in the very center of yourself. And when you stray from that center, you get lost and you make mistakes. I learned this the hard way. Your ego takes over. Everybody has an ego. I used to think the ego showed itself through someone being arrogant or stuck up or haughty. Or the who does she think she is prancing down a red carpet kind of thing. Well, I'm in show business and the business of showing myself. So I'm aware that there's a lot of egotism involved in this business. And I always thought that I had my ego in check until I realized that it's not just the obvious. It's not always acting out or showing off. In 2008, I chose Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth, for my book club. And this book will change the way you view your life and the people around you and your world.
Chapters 3 and 4 literally changed the way I saw myself and my ego. It changed for me what ego meant.
And Tolle says that any identification with form, meaning any identifying with something that is not the center of yourself, that is possessions, material things, cars, titles, social status, or in my case, identifying with the deep desire to be thin. You will find true success and happiness if you have only one goal. There really is only one, and that is this: to fulfill the highest, most truthful expression of yourself as a human being. You want to max out your humanity by using your energy to lift yourself up, your family, and the people around you. Theologian Howard Thurman said it best. He said, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." The world needs people like Michael Stalzenberg from Fort Lauderdale. When Michael was just 8 years old, Michael nearly died from a bacterial infection that cost him both of his hands and both of his feet. And in an instant, this vibrant little boy became a quadruple amputee, and his life was changed forever. But in losing who he once was, Michael discovered who he wanted to be. He refused to sit in that wheelchair all day and feel sorry for himself. So with prosthetics, he learned to walk and run and play again. He joined his middle school lacrosse team. And last month, when he learned that so many victims of the Boston Marathon bombing would become new amputees, Michael decided to banish that darkness with light. Michael and his brother Harris created MikeysRun.com to raise $1 million for other amputees by the time Harris runs the 2014 Boston Marathon. More than 1,000 miles away from here, these two young brothers are bringing people together to support this Boston community the way their community came together to support Michael. And when this 13-year-old man was asked about his fellow amputees, he said this: "First, they will be sad. They're losing something they will never get back. And that's scary. I was scared. But they'll be okay. They just don't know that yet. We might not always know it. We might not always see it or hear it on the news or even feel it in our daily lives. But I have faith that no matter what, class of 2013, you will be okay. And you will make sure our country is okay. I have faith because of that 9-year-old girl who went out and collected the change. I have faith because of David and Francine Wheeler. I have faith because of Michael and Harris Stalzenberg. And I have faith because of you, the network of angels sitting here today. One of them, Khadija Williams, who came to Harvard 4 years ago. Khadija had attended 12 schools in 12 years, living out of garbage bags amongst pimps and prostitutes and drug dealers, homeless, going into department stores, Walmart in the morning to bathe herself so that she wouldn't smell in front of her classmates. And today she graduates as a member of the Harvard class of 2013. Nobody's journey is seamless or smooth. We all stumble, we all have setbacks. If things go wrong, you hit a dead end, as you will. It's just life's way of saying, time to change course. So ask every failure, this is what I do. Every failure, every crisis, every difficult time, I say, what is this here to teach me? And as soon as you get the lesson, you get to move on. If you really get the lesson, you pass and you don't have to repeat the class. If you don't get the lesson, it shows up wearing another pair of pants or skirt to give you some remedial work. And what I found is that difficulties come when you don't pay attention to life's whisper.
because life always whispers to you first, and if you ignore the whisper, sooner or later you'll get a scream. Whatever you resist persists, but if you ask the right question, not why is this happening, but what is this here to teach me? What is this here to teach me? It puts you in the place and space to get the lesson you need. My friend Eckhart Tolle, who's written this wonderful book called A New Earth, that's all about letting the awareness of who you are stimulate everything that you do. He puts it like this. He says, don't react against a bad situation. Merge with that situation instead. And the solution will arise from the challenge. Because surrendering yourself doesn't mean giving up. It means acting with responsibility. Okay. Many of you know that, as President Hennessy said, I started this school in Africa. And I founded the school where I'm trying to give South African girls a shot at a future like yours, Stanford. And I spent 5 years making sure that school would be as beautiful as the students. I wanted every girl to feel her worth reflected in her surroundings. So I checked every blueprint, I picked every pillow, I was looking at the grout in between the bricks, I knew every thread count of the sheets, I chose every girl from the villages, from 9 provinces, and yet, last fall, I was faced with a crisis I'd never anticipated. I was told that one of the dorm matrons was suspected of sexual abuse. Well, that was, as you can imagine, devastating news. First, I cried. Actually, I sobbed for about a half an hour. And then I said, let's get to it. That's all you get is a half an hour. You need to focus on the now, what you need to do now. So I contacted a child trauma specialist. I put together a team of investigators. I made sure the girls had counseling and support. And Gail and I got on a plane and flew to South Africa. And the whole time I kept asking that question, what is this here to teach me? And as difficult as that experience has been, I got a lot of lessons. I understand now the mistakes I made because I had been paying attention to all of the wrong things. I built that school from the outside in when what really mattered was the inside out. So it's a lesson that applies to all of our lives as a whole. What matters most is what's inside. What matters most is the sense of integrity, of quality, and beauty. I got that lesson. And what I know is that the girls came away with something too. They've emerged from this more resilient and knowing that their voices have power.
There's a bigger dream waiting for you, just waiting for you to step into it. To step into it. Your life is big. Your life is huge. And we spend so much time wanting to be in somebody else's life. And you don't get honored. You don't get revered. You don't get celebrating wanting what somebody else has. Because that which created you, divine intelligence that dreamed you from before your ancestors ever knew they would become your ancestors, that which dreamed the seed of you, wants you to know how special, how wondrous, how mysterious, how complex, how glorious, how phenomenal you are. And you get no credit messing in somebody else's territory. Or trying to have power over something you have no control. Another one of my favorite teachings is the Wizard of Oz. When the Wicked Witch of the West says, go away from here because you don't have any power here, you have no power in any territory other than your own. Oh, but you are the master of that. You get to be the master of your own fate. You get to be the captain of your own soul. And if you just manage that, if you just took care of your territory, oh, the glorious, 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 wondrous, wondrous opportunities and possibilities that are waiting for you. So the question is, what are you resisting? What are you pushing against? What are you not allowing? What are you blocking? Because you have this idea of who and what you're supposed to be, instead of leaning into the dream that's already been created and waiting for you. It's waiting for you. And the second, I mean, it's an instant thing. It's a shift in the way you see yourself and the power from which you have come.
Practicing gratitude. It is my single most important life practice, I'd have to say. And I know with Thanksgiving coming, many people think about being thankful. There's lots of talk about Thanksgiving and blessings, but that's kind of like going to church on just Christmas and Easter. It counts, but it's not consistent, because for me, gratitude is something that is necessary and should be practiced every day, because making space for appreciating what you have opens you up for a happier, more fulfilled existence, I guarantee, while ensuring that those blessings just keep flowing. This is the truth. It's a law. What you focus on in your life expands. So focusing on what you're grateful for increases positive vibrations and feelings of joy. Just one good feeling builds on another good feeling and another. And if you actively appreciate all that you have in life, no matter how small it is, what you notice is that you end up having more. And when you hone in on what you don't have, you never have enough. So being grateful, I've learned, allows us to fill in the cracks and crevices between what we desire and what we already have with positivity. So we can pave the way for grace to show up and lead to an even better life. So how do you make gratitude a habit? For me, the first thing I do in the morning is I read some sort of spiritual enlightenment that allows me to start the day with a positive frame of mind that will only help usher in even more positive energy. And for me, that is the Daily Word, which is Christian-based, or the Book of Psalms, also Christian. Mark Nepo's Book of Awakening is just spiritual, no religion, with a daily meditation. And Rumi, or Mary Oliver. There's something called Bowl of Saki that I love too. It's a spiritual Sufi teachings that you can download for free into your inbox. But the greatest thing that I've ever done is having a gratitude journal. So I started one over 20 years ago. And every day for years now, I write down 5 things that I am grateful for. I believe you gotta write them down, because there is power, power, power in the written word. And it can be anything, big or small. Some days those things will come easy, you know, a chat with a close friend, or taking a walk in the crisp fall air, having a loved one cook you a dinner or bring you a cup of tea. Some days it might be difficult to even think of anything, and that's completely normal. And when things don't easily come to mind, go back to your breath, because if you're breathing, you ought to be grateful. Know that you have that, and simply opening your eyes in the morning and having that breath is a gift. But every day, I consistently write down 5 things that I'm grateful for. Sometimes it's more than 5, but if I can't get to 5, I just go breath, breath, breath. Gratitude is a posture of your heart, a choice and a privilege. So I hope that you'll make the choice to initiate a daily gratitude practice. If you haven't already, I've been saying it for years, because this I know for sure, appreciating, noting the delights that show up in your life will ensure more goodness is coming your way.
After a year like nobody has ever experienced, I believe that the best thing we can collectively do is to take care of our individual selves. Now, I know that might sound oversimplified and even selfish to some people, but this is what I know for sure, that you have to feed yourself with love and loving thoughts in order to show up more fortified and complete to give other people your love. We hear about self-care so much these days, but what does it really mean? Well, for me, it's about engaging in practices that fill you up in every way. That means eating foods that are both enjoyable and nourishing, giving your body the gift of some form of movement every day, and surrounding yourself with people whose energy uplifts you. This is so important.
Also, creating space in your day for at least, just give yourself at least a minimum of 5 minutes of stillness. That alone time is so crucial when you can distance yourself from the voices of the world so you can hear your own voice loud and clear. That's why I have dedicated Sundays as my time for recalibration and renewal. So sometimes it's just a simple walk in nature or just sitting out in the backyard. All of it, that alone time helps me recenter, refuel me for whatever the coming week is. And however that shows up for you, that's what you need to do for you. I love how Glennon Doyle put it in her book, Love Warrior. She said, I have met myself and I'm going to care for her fiercely. So I know we have to be reminded as women people to continuously make ourselves a priority, because when you truly value yourself, the world reflects that worth back to you. Nobody needs to be reminded of the importance of self-care, though, more than mothers. So we all know that back in normal times, before there was a pandemic, moms had so much on their plates, managing the needs of children and spouses and households and in-laws. And that's why I have so much respect for people who do it well. And now the pandemic has taken its toll, from juggling increased childcare demands to mental health ramifications to economic strain, from the more than 5 million jobs of women were lost since February of 2020. So we know mothers are carrying a heavy load on their shoulders, and that's just another indication that self-focus on yourself is so important. Is there someone you need to forgive? It's one of the most difficult principles of life to practice, but it can also be one of the most rewarding. It's one of the grandest gifts you can give to yourself. You forgive and you become relieved of the heavy burden of resentment that you've been carrying that's weighing you down. You become lighter, literally, and things in your life begin to fall into place. So as someone who has experienced abuse during childhood, I know very well that the struggle to forgive the people in your life who have hurt you is real and it's painful. But know this, it's not about condoning whatever it is that person did to mistreat you. It is about allowing what they did to affect how you live your life now. Dr. Gerald Jampolsky put it to me this way years ago on the Oprah Show. It was a big old aha moment that I've accepted now as spiritual law, when he said, forgiveness is giving up the hope that the past could have been any different. I repeat that. Forgiveness is giving up the hope that what woulda, coulda, shoulda happened, in fact, it did not happen. It's accepting the reality of what did happen and moving on. This truth has been fundamental in allowing me to live my best life. It was transformative. You have to come to the realization that what might have been is not what is. Easy to hear, I know, and harder to do. You got to sit with the hurt, feel it. It's uncomfortable. But when you can rise up and just really meet that pain face to face and then let it flow through you, only then can you let it go and step out of the hurt of your history into the possibility of the present. I've carried this lesson from Iyanla VanZant with me for some time. I remember years ago on the show, she said, you can accept or reject the way you are treated by other people, but until you heal the wounds of your past, you will continue to bleed. You can bandage the bleeding with food, with alcohol, with drugs, with work, with cigarettes, with sex, she said, but eventually it's gonna ooze through and stain your life. You must find the strength to open up the wounds, stick your hands inside, pull out the core of the pain that is holding you in your past, the memories, and make peace with them. So here's the formula. Accept what has happened. Forgive others. Forgive yourself, accept the now. That is the recipe to begin healing, and give up the hope that the past could have been anything other than what it actually was. Whatever happened helped to make you, you. My hope is that you find the courage to relinquish all your grudges, because what I do know for sure is that on the other side of forgiveness is freedom. The freedom to live the life for which you were intended and the one you actually deserve.
There are so many feelings that we've all experienced over the past year and a half as a collective. So we're all in it together. I know we've heard that before. A lot of people don't believe it, but we're in it together feeling the same things, whether we agree on what we're feeling or not. And one of the abiding feelings I know is the sense of uncertainty, not knowing for sure what is next. So our lives have been shaken up and shifted, to say the least, which has made a lot of us uncertain of what is on the horizon. When will we go back to the office full time? What is that going to require of me? How long will we be wearing masks? How long will we be fighting about masks? When will all of this be over? And it really is completely natural to not have all of the answers. So one thing I do know for sure is that we all have to let go of knowing, of having complete control and being able to ready ourselves to navigate waves of change as they come. But how do we do that? Anxiety comes when we live in the unpredictable nuances of the future, all the what ifs. You know, I remember when I was on trial back in 1998 for disparaging a burger and had to sit in a courtroom for 6 weeks in Amarillo. Thank you very much. And in the beginning of that trial, I had so much anxiety. Learning to stay focused on just that day and not the multiple days ahead is what actually kept me sane. So I think we all must practice becoming more comfortable stepping into the unknown. And when those uncertain, overwhelmed feelings creep in, you need to make an effort to stay in the present moment and just be still and breathe and say to yourself, I am here now, and right now everything is okay. All is well, all will be well, and there's nothing I cannot handle. So take some time to be quiet enough to listen to your internal GPS, your truer self, and let the clamor of the world dissipate. Listen to the whispers, as I like to say, and then let that guide you. Sometimes just the fear of uncertainty can stop us from taking the next step toward a breakthrough, but we cannot let uncertainty just fester and morph then into doubt. Doubt that your fortitude, that your determination, that your values won't have your back as you navigate whatever is coming next. Now, they've been there for you in the past. They're there for you now, and they will be by your side as time goes on. So look at where you've come from, how far you've journeyed to get to the you that you are now. And you're still adapting, evolving to an ever better version of yourself. Hopefully that's what we're all trying to do. Who you are and what you believe in can remain steadfast and rooted enough to take on uncertainty.
There is so much going on in the world right now. Mask mandates are changing all over the country as vaccination rates are going up. Travel is coming back. A return to working in the office may be in the foreseeable future for a lot of you. And as we look to this next chapter, after such a long and challenging stretch, I think it's time for us all to think about refreshing ourselves in a way that allows us to keep what matters most, turn over what we're ready to let go of, and make room for the new in our world, in our lives. So I don't know about you all, but I am forever changed by all of these months away from the bustle of the world. And I will forevermore carefully choose what has to have my attention and what does not, because I've learned a lot of things do not. So when we hit that little refresh button on our computers or phones, it updates everything so quickly and just like that, so simple. Sometimes it's even automated, so there's not even any thinking about it. A refresh, though, in real life, as we know, takes effort, it takes time, it takes patience. So be kind to yourself during these days. Check in, be still until you can hear and feel the answers you need for moving forward. And always feel blessed that we survived a pandemic, and we have another chance to get things right in our daily lives.
And I would say that the best way to begin to figure out who you are really meant to be is to ask
the universe, God, that question. God, how can I be used in service to myself first? And how can I then use that service to serve the world? Use your life to serve the world, and you will find that it also serves you. One of the biggest mistakes people make is thinking that they have to get paid a lot of money or even get paid at all for their calling. You are here to honor your calling, whether you're paid for it or not. If you can get paid for it, that makes life exponentially better. But if you are not paid for it, that is also really just fine, because honoring the calling feeds everything else you do in your life.
Letting go of energy that's clouding your vision and holding you back. It's a life practice that I learned long ago that has freed me, whew, so many ways. It's a fact that holding grudges against somebody who's done you wrong, or replaying, revisiting hurtful situations in your head over and over, only weighs you down and prevents you from being who you're meant to be right now. Because you're still energetically holding on to the past. The energy that you put into constantly rewinding to the resentment, why did they do that? Why did they say that to me? I didn't deserve to be treated that way. All of that only keeps you stuck. It will never change what happened. You gotta press stop and reject the urge to keep replaying, so that you can then fast forward into the now for yourself. You know, a lot of people think that holding on to things that disempowered them is going to somehow magically turn it around. Mm-mm. As I said in my message a couple of weeks ago about forgiveness, you have to release the notion, give up the hope that the past could have been any different. And you also must release the idea that people would do what you might do in any given instance. This is a big one. I had to learn and relearn before I actually got it. Expecting people to do what you would do in a situation only leads to your disappointment, not theirs. They're going on with their life. So let people be who they are, and either you accept it or you don't. Not doing that keeps you stuck in a circumstance that actually costs you time, costs you energy. And I can guarantee that oftentimes the person on the other side of the bitterness you're holding onto, they're not even thinking about you. In fact, they probably have just moved on. They certainly aren't obsessing the way you are. Think of it like letting go of any bad habit that just doesn't serve your well-being. Not an easy task. Taking the road to a more enlightened, healthy existence never is. So this is what I want to ask you to ask yourself. Why am I holding on to this? How is this serving me? And really think about the answer. Maybe it makes you feel validated. Maybe it makes you feel righteous. Or maybe taking on the pain is your way of recognizing the injustice, so that even though it won't be made right, it can at least not be forgotten. Then I ask you, again, ask yourself, do you want to be right? Or do you want peace? This was huge for me. The unfortunate fact is that having both may not be possible. And also, you may never get your moment of righteousness, so why wait for it? Choose peace. What I know for sure is that in this world, time is a moving on, and it's our most valuable commodity. You can never get it back. So staying in that loop, playing it over and over in your head of hurt, only amplifies your pain. Let it go. Exhale, make room in your heart for something that is uplifting. Surround yourself with people who want the best for you. You have the ability to shift the DNA of your spirit and control how you perceive life. So why not lighten your load and let it go? Knowing when you know better, you do better. We're ready to move on to what I think is another powerful lesson that I started to get when I was a really young girl, having been raised by my grandmother, and then at 6 years old, being separated from my grandmother, being moved to Milwaukee and suddenly in a foreign environment for myself. I remember walking into that new space and recognizing that
In many ways, I was alone, which is a terrible feeling if you're 6 years old. But I have always had the deep understanding for myself that if anything was going to move forward in my life, that I was going to have to be responsible for making that happen. And I know that to be true now and can articulate it as you are responsible for your life. And if you're sitting around waiting on somebody to save you, to fix you, to even help you, you are wasting your time, because only you have the power to take responsibility to move your life forward. And the sooner you get that, the sooner your life gets into gear. This is what I know from doing 25 years and thousands of interviews on The Oprah Show. It does not matter where you come from. I have seen people come out of the desert, walk across the desert, being born in the most dire of circumstances. Doesn't matter what your mama did, whether she did or had a PhD or no D, what matters is now, this moment, and your willingness to see this moment for what it is, accept it, forgive the past, take responsibility, and move forward.